This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iraq condemns U.S. airstrikes on its territory, an act of aggression that's claimed at least 16 lives, injured dozens more in the Arab country. Meanwhile, Damascus denounces American attacks on Syria, emphasizing attacks undermine the country's capacity to combat Daesh terrorists. And a genocidal campaign led by the U.S. and Israel in Gaza reaches its 120th day, with the death tolls now exceeding 27,200, majority of them women and children. U.S. says it's carried out airstrikes on 85 targets inside of Iraq and Syria. This after Washington pledged to respond to a deadly drone strike on its troops in Jordan. U.S. Central Command claims targets include rocket, missile, and drone depots. The U.S. president says that the strikes will continue at the time and place of Washington's choosing. However, Joe Biden says the U.S. is not looking for conflict in West Asia. Washington's confirmed deaths of three of its forces in the drone strike that hit its military base last weekend in Jordan. An Iraqi resistance group has claimed responsibility. It marks the first time U.S. military personnel have died in an attack since the start of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza on the 7th of October. And now strong reactions to U.S. attacks are streaming in from regional countries, not least by Iraq and Syria themselves. Iraq has condemned the strikes near its western border with Syria as a violation of its sovereignty. It warned that the attack, which claimed the lives of 16 people, including civilians, will have disastrous consequences for Iraq and the region. Syria, meanwhile, says aggression caused casualties among civilians and soldiers and inflicted heavy material damage on the eastern part of the country. It added, this is the same region where Syrian forces are battling remnants of the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group, and this proved U.S. collusion with the terrorists. Said the U.S. seeks to undermine the capability of the Syrian army and its allies in combating terrorism. Iran's also strongly denounced the strikes as another strategic mistake by the U.S. It said attacks serve Israeli interests and further embroil the U.S. in the region. Meanwhile, intense Israeli attacks on Gaza have been continuing now for nearly 4 months. In the latest spate of attacks, at least 100 people were killed across the besieged Palestinian territory. There were fresh air and artillery attacks on Khan Yunis. That's Gaza's main southern city, which has recently been the focal point of Israeli strikes. Medical facilities in Khan Yunis have been affected as well. Al-Amal and Al-Nasser hospitals have been under an Israeli siege for more than a week. And now the UN is warning a serious shortage of oxygen at the two medical centers. After Khan Yunis, the city of Rafah will be the next target of the Israeli ground attacks, and that according to the regime's military. Rafah is located in southern Gaza and hosts hundreds of thousands of displaced Palestinians. UN agencies have been warning about the deteriorating situation in Rafah.
So I want to emphasize our deep concern about the escalation of hostilities in Khan Yunis, which has resulted in an increase in the number of internally displaced people seeking refuge in Rafah. In recent days, thousands of Palestinians have continued to flee to the south, which is already hosting over half the Gaza's population of some 2.3 million people. Most are living in makeshift structures, tents, or out in the open. Rafah is a pressure cooker of despair, and we fear for what comes next.
The spokesman for the UN Humanitarian Office also warned about disease outbreaks in Gaza. He added, there is simply not enough food, clean drinking water, or protection for the population there. The World Health Organization says people in Gaza are enduring unimaginable circumstances. They are exhausted, hungry, and traumatized. And UNICEF says at least 17,000 children in Gaza are unaccompanied or separated from their families. It says that Palestinian children's mental health has severely been impacted and almost all of them are in need of support. Over 27,200 people have so far been killed in Gaza since October the 7th, some 12,500 of whom have been children. Palestinians in Gaza are facing humanitarian catastrophe amid Israel's genocidal war on the besieged territory, which is now in its 120th day. Our correspondent Moti Abu Musabe earlier joined us from the Gaza city of Deir al-Balah with some details.
Yes, actually, this current situation is unimaginable, and no one can imagine how catastrophic the situation would be if the Israeli occupation forces managed to raid and attack Rafah city. Because even these moments, as we speak, the current situation is catastrophic by all means. And I mean that there is no safe place in Gaza for the 4 consecutive months since the very beginning of this incident. There was no safe place in Gaza, and this situation would become more hazardous for the Palestinian people, more catastrophic for the Palestinian people, because all areas of Gaza Strip would be under the constant Israeli bombardments. We are waiting for more Israeli crimes and massacres yet to be committed if the Israeli occupation forces actually translated their pledges to attack Rafah city into real measures on the ground. So no one can imagine how catastrophic the situation would be. And as you know, that since the beginning of this onslaught, the UNRWA and the UN and all international human rights organizations, they have been releasing appeals for the international community, for everyone else to interfere and to put an end to this continuous onslaught, because what we are witnessing nowadays in Gaza is a real genocide. We are talking about 2.3 million Palestinian civilians, 70% out of them are children and women. They are completely afflicted by this continuous onslaught. We are talking about continuous Israeli strikes without having any red lines. This is happening before the eyes of the international community, and the people here are literally living and experiencing a horrific nightmare that till this moment has no light at the end of the tunnel.
A senior Hamas official says a new truce plan to end the onslaught on Gaza is unacceptable and does not include a permanent ceasefire. Osama Hamdan said resistance movement will not accept the proposal for successive pauses in fighting. He also said that Hamas seeks the release of thousands of prisoners held in the regime's jails, including those serving life sentences. The multi-stage proposal has been drafted by officials from Qatar, Egypt, the U.S., and Israel to halt the Israeli regime's onslaught on Gaza. It also aims to enable exchange of Israeli and Palestinian prisoners. Meanwhile, Israeli troops have destroyed a defunct mosque in the northern Gaza Strip as fighting between Israeli forces and Palestinian resistance fighters rages on. Regime released footage showing its forces targeting an abandoned mosque in the city of Beit Lahia just for fun. The move follows demolition of the Israel University in southern Gaza. That university had authorities saying that Israel had occupied the campus and turned it into a military base and detention facility for months before blowing it up. The Israeli military has destroyed hundreds of schools and universities since launching its onslaught on Gaza on the 7th of October, killing over 4,300 students and more than 230 teachers and administrators. The Yemeni army says it's carried out yet another operation against military targets in the Israeli port city of Eilat. Army spokesperson General Yahya Sari says the Yemeni forces struck Eilat with a number of missiles. Army says operations are in solidarity with Palestinians. Yemen's vowed to continue its military operations until Israel stops its war on Gaza and ends its siege of the Palestinian enclave. The Yemeni forces have targeted over 24 Israeli-linked vessels in the Red and Arabian Seas in the past weeks.
Amid the Western aggression against Yemen, thousands of people gathered in the capital Sana'a and other cities to urge the Yemeni army to expand its naval operations against American, British, and Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. They also pledged to continue supporting Palestinians at all costs.
Our message to the forces of American Zionist aggression is that you need to stop killing women, children, and defenseless people in Gaza. God has blessed us with Islam, and we will not abandon our brothers in Palestine. The Westerners will see what we will do under the leadership of Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi, who does what he says.
Our hearts are broken over what's happening in Gaza, including crimes, starvation, and the siege imposed on the people of Gaza. They want those who survived the bombing to starve to death.
Protesters also slammed the European Union's bid to send military forces to the Red Sea, aiming to protect Israeli maritime navigation. The demonstrators said this move will escalate the conflict, since the Yemeni army will have the right to add European vessels to its list of targets.
The European Union is America's plaything. They are indeed many countries, but they follow America's orders to serve American interests. We call the Prosperity Alliance the Suicide Alliance because they commit suicide when they fight us. And we will not change our position no matter how much they threaten us and no matter how large a force they mobilize to fight us.
Any European force that comes to the Red Sea will have the same fate as the American and British forces, meaning that they will become legitimate targets for the Yemeni naval operations and will be hit daily by the Yemeni missile strikes.
Earlier, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, stated that U.S. attempts to seek help from China mediation to stop Yemen's naval operations show the failure of the U.S. and U.K. in their aggression. He also criticized Arab countries for exporting goods to Israel, calling it an act of betrayal as Palestinians starve to death in the besieged Gaza.
Despite the U.S. and U.K. airstrikes, people here insist that Yemeni naval operations should continue as long as the genocidal war on Gaza rages on. They urge their army to target the interests of any party that supports the Israeli regime.
Now tensions continue along the southern Lebanese border, where Israel has launched fresh artillery shells. Hezbollah resistance movement, meanwhile, says it's targeted Israeli military posts and occupies Sheba Farms. Mariam Saleh has your details.
At first, they said that they targeted the post. Then only less than an hour later, they said that they targeted a deployment of soldiers that were near that barrack specifically in the Ruwaya Saf al-Alam in the occupied Sheba Farms. They also targeted a house, as they said, or a building, in the settlement of Avivim, and they said clearly in their statement that this comes in retaliation to the continuous Israeli shelling against the villages and the towns in the bordering towns, and the specifically the civilian houses and homes that are destroyed, and also the fact that the Israelis targeted a supermarket in the town of Jibbein, and they mentioned that in their statements, saying that they will not tolerate when the Israelis, of course, destroy a civilian house or a civilian infrastructure, any sort of building that is civilian, then they would also target a building on the Israeli side, which is considered by the Israeli civilian. Of course, for now, all that area, whether it is Avivim or Waisat Lalam or the Kiryat Shemona, all those areas are have become closed military zones. So at least 50 bombs landed on the town of Aitarun, in addition to the targeting of a natural reserve in the mountain of Blot, which is near the town of Ramya and Zib'in.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has hailed the country's remarkable achievements in the space program, saying the Islamic Republic has become one of the top 10 leading countries in the aerospace industry. Raisi was speaking at an event marking Iran's National Space Technology Day. He said Iran's successful launch of 11 satellites into orbit in the past 2 years has frustrated the enemy's plot to isolate the country through sanctions. He added innovation and creativity could not be stifled by external pressures. He further stated the West has failed to isolate Iran, saying Iranian scientists have transformed the challenges into opportunities. He called the country's space technology a strategic advantage. Meanwhile, Iran's Minister of Information and Communications Technology said Iran wants to turn the space program into an economic industry. Issa Zarifpour said Iran plans to launch a satellite belonging to another country, which, according to him, will be a great achievement for the Islamic Republic. The Iranian army has unveiled an upgraded version of the indigenous long-range missile system called the Shafaq. The Shafaq missile system, which has a range of 20 kilometers, can hit a target with pinpoint accuracy. Systems installed on helicopters and can fire large barrage of missiles both at night and during the day. The missile system has been fully developed by experts at the Aviation Division of the Iranian Army. The system was put on display at an exhibition where several other domestically developed night vision devices, radar, and electronic warfare systems were also unveiled in the presence of Iran's Army Commander, Major General Abdulrahim Mousavi. A South African youth has used his iconic neighborhood as the perfect canvas to highlight the plight of the Palestinian people. Now, by adorning the walls of their homes with murals of Gaza, the community located on the slopes overlooking Cape Town hopes a message of Palestine's fight for liberation will be seen.
Born of political exiles brought to the Cape of Good Hope by Dutch colonialists, the old Malay quarter of Cape Town, better known as Boerkop, is reaching back to its roots as a location of protest by raising a flag for Palestine. The houses of Boerkop have always been painted in eye-catching colors, but the walls of these homes have now taken on a whole new meaning. Tourists regularly frequent this area, and the paintings here convey a message that will travel around the world. As Palestinians continue to endure the deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza, a young South African nurse has taken the initiative by painting what some say is the largest mural of its kind for Palestine. He says by painting this large Palestinian flag in a location overlooking the Cape Town Central Business District, Palestine cannot be ignored.
With tourism comes photography, and I decided to allow the world to protest inadvertently from every angle, from every ad, from every Instagram post. Anybody who comes to Boerkop will be for Palestine.
Since launching the Murals for Gaza campaign, Herdin says scores of residents have asked that their walls be painted to demonstrate support for Palestine. The project has also been taken up in other communities.
I'm just happy that I'm going to get it on my wall, because we have all the people walking down here, and it tells a big story. It tells a tremendous story about the genocide that's what's happening.
If the mainstream media will not report on the atrocities being committed in Gaza, then the walls will speak. That is what we're working with. So we are just making that. Every wall is going to tell a story from every angle, from the birth of Zionism to the atrocities being committed to the strength and unity of this particular neighborhood on where we stand in the genocide.
Boerkop, on the periphery of the Cape Town CBD, has had to contend with its own struggle of gentrification, as big business and foreigners have tried to evict the traditional residents from their ancestral homes. So they understand well the enduring struggle of Palestinians against the colonial settlers. Hassan Siriap, Cape Town.
And that brings us to the end of your news bulletin, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله. الله يا الله والحمد لله. الله ولا إله إلا الله. الله يا الله والله أكبر.
When we are decided on serving Islam, the blessed and almighty Allah will not leave us alone, will not leave us, God forbid, to get in trouble. The problems are always from the person himself. If a person is not having a problem from within himself, they do not arise from outside until there is no decay from within the nation itself. The foreigners do not dominate. They want to do things from inside. Now, thank Allah, we are confident of internal situation. When we have this occurrence, we must serve.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم dear listeners, welcome back to IRIB English Radio. This is the spring of the truth and I am Beta, the host of today's episode, and I have the pleasure to be here to actually analyze some ethical and practical points from the viewpoint of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. All problems and differences of humanity will be resolved if the human being's selfishness and animal desires are purified, trained, and tamed. Allah Almighty has created the human soul with a predisposition to selfishness as a test, unless he lives by the moral values of the Quran and tames his earthly desires, this feeling will come to dominate his whole moral framework. Such a person generally thinks of himself alone rather than everyone else. He always wants the best, finest, and most perfected of everything for himself. He wants to have possessions and children and for his own family merely to be comfortable. In face of difficulties, he will expect the people around him to undergo all kinds of risks and troubles for him and to support him, even at the cost of their own interests. He seeks to protect his own whims and interests and to ensure his own ease and comfort. So, when the situation is different, he can forego many things he values for the sake of protecting his own interests and preventing any harm coming to him. Allah has revealed this passionate selfish feeling in human earthly desires as follows in the Quran. Truly man was created headstrong, desperate when bad things happen, and begrudging when good things come.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu alayhi.
threat to modern societies. The materialist thinking that is widespread in modern societies that do not live by religious moral values reinforces the selfish and egotistical spirit in human nature. It will lead to a me-first philosophy. Indeed, the idea of so long as I am all right, who cares what happens to anyone else, or looking out for number one, or generally dominate such societies, which is exactly what we are seeing and witnessing in the modern world. If, according to the beautiful word of Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah alayh, if we can handle and struggle with this urge of selfishness and animal desires in ourselves in a world full of individualism and materialistic point of views, it's completely natural for this mindset of spirituality to be really difficult. But this bitterness will end to a sweet destination.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Depression is a mood disorder that causes a persistent feeling of sadness and loss of interest. It affects how you feel, think, and behave, and can lead to a variety of emotional and physical problems. Patients may have trouble doing normal day-to-day activities and could sometimes even feel as if life isn't worth living. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Depression may require long-term treatment with a host of pills, antidepressants, anxiolytics, neuroleptics, and tranquilizers, but sometimes the cure could be much worse than the ailment. Thousands of documented cases prove that the prescription of such drugs have led to suicide, acts of violence, and even murder. Death by prescription reveals the shocking truth about psychotropic drugs and a healthcare system that perhaps undermines the potential dangers of such medication. Stay with us for this part of the documentary.
Mark was 48 years old when he committed suicide in October 2013. He was suffering from recurring back pain and had had an operation, but the cure was worse than the ailment. It hit him hard, and he was prescribed antidepressants. Mark was the father of two children and had never had suicidal thoughts before, but in less than a week, the medication sent him into madness. His sister Florence has still not recovered from it. Is an antidepressant responsible for the death of Florence's brother? These heartbreaking events are echoed in thousands of documented cases across the world. Psychotropic drugs are under the spotlight. Antidepressants, anxiolytics, neuroleptics, sleeping pills, and tranquilizers are supposed to stitch together the fragilities of the soul. They save many lives. But can they also lead to suicide or even murder? What are these psychotropic medications that are sometimes held responsible for acts of violence? First off are antidepressants, the grandfather of the new wave being Prozac. This antidepressant is supposed to act upon depressive states, deep sadness, psychic fatigue, and anxiety. It should give a mood boost in order to bring the patient back to a stable condition. In France, it's taken by at least 6 million people. Next, we have the benzodiazepines, with the most widespread examples being anxiolytic drugs such as Valium or Xanax, but also a high number of sleeping pills. They treat states of anxiety, panic attacks, and insomnia. Unlike antidepressants, they bring the mood down to calm the anxiety. It's a bestseller in France. 11.5 million people take it each year, more than one in four adults. Finally, there are various tranquilizers and powerful neuroleptics, which influence the nerves. Nobody disagrees with how useful these medications are as they act upon serotonin, a neurotransmitter that regulates the mood. But depending on individuals, they can short-circuit the brain, which can be dangerous and even fatal. In France, Professor Evan is one of the only doctors to sound the alarm. He has compiled or translated a handful of reports and studies that warn against psychotropic drugs. At what moment do these medications become dangerous? For benzodiazepines, whose effects are immediate, it's during the first days of the treatment, especially when coming off the medication. For a large number of people, anxiolytics or sleeping pills can be more addictive than heroin, which is why the treatment shouldn't last longer than a few weeks. As for antidepressants, which don't take effect until 2 or 3 weeks of use, murder or suicide can occur during the first few days of treatment, whenever the dosage is increased, or when the medications are stopped. When this happens, a devastating rebound effect can occur that places some patients in a state that they feel compelled to continue. Before taking his life, Florence's brother was right at the beginning of his treatment. In his letter, he speaks of having acid in his body. Are prescriptions given too readily in France? To allow us to find out, we went to 6 randomly chosen medical clinics equipped with a hidden camera. 95% of psychotropic medication is supplied by general practitioners. Our scenario will be simple, going through a rough patch due to losing a job. 5 minutes and 32 seconds was all it took to get a prescription of anxiolytics during the first consultation. The second doctor hands over a prescription of antidepressants, which he confirms have virtually no side effects whatsoever. The third is not strictly in favor of psychotropic medication, but strangely, he still supplies Seroplex, an antidepressant. Only the fourth finds it too early to give a psychotropic medication in such a case. Antihistamines are also used to treat allergies, but they can facilitate sleep. The fifth proposes an anxiolytic. She suggests a half tablet, then a whole, then 2, then up to 4 a day. The prescription lasts 3 months, whereas the recommended limit is 8 weeks due to the extremely addictive effects of Xanax. If that isn't enough, she suggests adding an antidepressant. But the record was beaten by the last doctor, who proposed both an anxiolytic and an antidepressant in only 2 minutes. Everybody's happy, except when psychotropic medication drives somebody mad. Here's a brilliant young girl, Aurélie. 6 years ago, her treatment transformed her into a destructive machine. Aurélie could have died or gone insane. She attempted suicide and was then committed to a psychiatric hospital. 6 years ago, with a master's degree in economics, she found a job in New York. She worked hard, went out often, and was close to burnout. She returned to Paris. Her general practitioner was absent, so she met with a psychiatrist. The peaceful young girl was in a rage, and it worried her. So she consulted other doctors. Aurélie had a strong reaction to the dosage increase. A suicide attempt, followed by a psychiatric hospital. She therefore decides to stop the treatment. The violent urges disappeared immediately, but it would take her 2 years to fully recover. Today, Aurélie has rebuilt her life. She lives in London, where she has become a painter. But she still wants to know what really happened. She therefore meets with a reputed British psychiatrist, David Healy. For the pharmaceutical industry, this man is a menace. For years, he has denounced psychotropic medication as dangerous, and his expertise has led to major criticism for the leading laboratories. He claims that these pills are useful but dangerous.
Well, first of all, the pills can be helpful. I use these pills to treat people, but they don't suit everyone. And when they don't suit you, they can definitely be poisonous. Yeah. They can make you want to kill yourself. They can make you want to kill other people. And they can generally cause you to hear voices and become crazy.
Yeah.
There's certainly about 1 in 20 people who go on the pills, at least, have what you could call an extreme reaction to them. So that's actually fairly common, okay? Roughly half of the people that go on these pills, they just aren't suited to them. They have a bad reaction, but they don't have an extreme reaction.
If someone has a side effect of the medication, they can say, listen, it's because you had a depression at the beginning, that's why you were like this. So they make you feel that it's because of your first state that you feel so bad. It's not because of the medication.
And this is the problem. This is where things really go wrong, where once you've been put on the pills, doctors don't recognize when they have made things worse. What they say is it's down to doctors. We make the pills. It's down to doctors to use them wisely. If things go wrong, it's the doctor's fault, okay, not ours. Mm. Now, the pharmaceutical industry have as much control of the situation as the Soviet Union used to have during the 1960s.
Aurélie comes out of the interview with the impression that she was the victim of a medical error. She thinks about her psychiatrist with a heavy heart. So she will meet up with her 6 years later to finally turn the page. The psychiatrist concedes an error in the diagnosis, but the whole system leads to an increase of psychotropic consumption. It's in the interest of pharmaceutical companies to have a high number of ill people, as psychotropic medication represents a global market of tens of billions of dollars. As the number one user in the world of such medication, France is a true cash register. These happiness pills are making the pharmaceutical companies smile. Their profits exceed those of the petroleum companies. In the United States, this exaggerated medicalization has a particular resonance. As the years went by, unexplained suicides by children taking antidepressants or anxiolytics hit the public opinion. Here, a 10-year-old child is phoning the emergency services. His 14-year-old sister has attempted suicide, having been on Paxil for just a few days, an antidepressant known in France under the name of Seroxat.
This is 911. Who is this? Where is your sister? What is she trying to do? Take pills?
What? No, my dad told me.
Hold on, tell me.
GSK, the laboratory that manufactures Paxil, managed to conceal explosive studies conducted by its own experts. Following a court trial, the authorities obliged GSK to reveal the studies. They showed that the medication increased suicidal thoughts or acts by up to 8 times. Massacres perpetrated by teenagers should also be mentioned. 9 out of 10 killers were on a cocktail of psychotropic medication. Despite thousands of people that call for action against the pharmaceutical companies, psychotropic medication remains a bestseller in the U.S. and it's business as usual. Every year, the powerful American Psychiatric Association organizes the most important symposium on the planet. Over 5 days, 15,000 psychiatrists from across the globe attend several conferences. The pharmaceutical industry struck gold. It largely finances the event by promoting its latest medications, and the stands invade an entire hall. For the occasion, even the Vice President of the USA, Joe Biden, is here. This reflects the importance of the event. Leading the American Psychiatric Association is Jeffrey Lieberman, certainly the most influential psychiatrist on the planet. During the press conference, we asked him questions regarding the dangers of psychotropic medication.
These are not dangerous drugs by and large, or certainly no more dangerous than those which are used routinely for other non-psychiatric types of disorders. The side effects should never be a deterrent for somebody who genuinely suffers from depression getting treatment.
This is a disease, a brain disorder, with about a 5% mortality rate. Depression is a disorder where you cannot experience emotion because you feel dead inside. You feel hopeless, and you would be dead, but you probably don't have the wherewithal to figure out how to commit suicide.
A lot of the over-exaggeration about fears of side effects and are promulgated by people who either don't know or don't want to know, and they foment this.
Is Jeffrey Lieberman best positioned to answer about this medication? The list of pharmaceutical companies that finance him is infinite. We can better understand why Jeffrey Lieberman doesn't much like party poopers, the hundreds of protesters who regularly come to disturb the great gathering of psychiatry. This includes a multitude of associations, as well as the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, which is run by Scientologists. Today's slogan, "Stop Drugging Our Soldiers." A wave of unexpected suicides effectively shook the U.S. Army. And the protesters blame the antidepressants that are administered in 9 out of 10 cases.
22 U.S. veterans are committing suicide every single day. There are more active duty military dying from suicide in 2012 than on the battlefield. There are 49 international drug regulatory warnings on antidepressants that caution against aggression, mania, suicide, in some cases homicidal ideation. It's outrageous. So it's not as if the psychiatrists don't know.
Faced with the protesters, the mainly foreign psychiatrists are somewhat skeptical.
I just discussed a little with them was that there seems to be sometimes it's different to difficult to know if there's a causative relationship. If you have a progression in the disease and you are medicated too, is it the medication or is it the disease itself?
I read stories that quite a few veterans committed suicide last year, but I was wondering how many suicides have been prevented by taking antidepressants. So I suppose you can't cure everything with just taking a pill. You should give the psychotherapy as well, but I'm not sure if the antidepressants are only responsible for the increased suicide rate.
In the Congress room, many conferences take place one after another, but nobody is dealing with the dangers of antidepressants. One of them is led by Anthony Rothschild, a psychiatrist well known for his successful books on psychotropic drugs. The great specialist is holding a debate on the adaptation of treatments depending on the illness. But not once does he say that antidepressants should not be prescribed. Our question is straightforward.
It seems that there is a lot of danger with antidepressants. What do you think about this? Like suicide or, murders?
No. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about, but I just told you there's no reliable scientific evidence that antidepressants cause people to commit murder or any other crime or suicide.
So how come that on boxes?
Right, this is not serious, okay?
Is this a surprising reaction? Anthony Rothschild also has conflicts of interest with an impressive number of pharmaceutical companies.
So I told you what I thought. You're going to keep asking me the same question.
Okay,
well, you got my quote, all right?
Okay, very good.
How can such things still be said in this day and age when on all the stands promoting psychotropic medication, whole boards are covered by signs warning of side effects? Among the several side effects, the risk of suicide or violent behavior is prioritized by all. These warnings are a legal obligation enforced by medical organizations. But how much are these warnings worth next to the publicity hype from the pharmaceutical companies?
When you're depressed, where do you want to go? Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one. Depression hurts in so many ways.
These ads, banned in France, reach tens of millions of households in the United States, one of the rare countries where the promotion of medication is allowed. For the promoters of these ads, a new customer is a captive customer.
Thank you. Harabi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Harabi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Harabi English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome dear listeners to a new episode of For a Better Life. Once again, I have the opportunity to be here next to you and talk about different hints of human personalities, human potential power from Islamic perspective in order to have a better life. As you know, we're in an era that we need some triggers in order to be in the right path. And these triggers doesn't come easily, and mostly they come after an inner revolution. So when humans vary by their piety, every soul falls short of perfection. There is room for improvement in all of us, and this continuous push to better ourselves should be until our death. Death takes people suddenly, so we must leave asking ourselves, am I ready to answer to Allah? If not, today is time to change. And as I mentioned, this mentality that every time may be the last time you are breathing, every time may be the last chance for you to have the approval of Allah Almighty, this mindset is exactly the mindset that you have to maintain in order to make use of every moment of your life to get the satisfaction of Allah Almighty and have these revolutionary times more often. As Muslims, each one of us is a member of many communities. Whether it is our family, our country, ummah, there are bonds between us that span the whole world. We should also care about encouraging positive change for those in our communities. So it's not only about changing yourself or making revolutions for yourself, but if you go throughout the history, you see like you will understand that there were some revolutions throughout the history that changed the whole history and encouraged the actually bravery in the Muslim community specifically in order to fight and stand against the darkness and oppression. But how should we approach this matter? The Quran tells us, truly Allah will not change the condition of a people as long as they do not change their state themselves. A really beautiful verse, which is a deep meaning for sure, and I make it a trigger for you, dear listeners, to go and search about the interpretation of this verse and your responsibility towards changing and standing against the oppression. So let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back in a heartbeat. Stay tuned.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Is all I need.
It's all I need.
Love is all I need.
All I need,
love is all I need.
All I need,
love is all I need.
Oh,
is your love is all I need to be all I need. And I know that you see how much you mean to me. Is your love is all I need to be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is For a Better Life and IRIB English Radio at your service. So, as you know, we were talking about the both inner and outer revolutions that we had throughout the history that changed people. And we came to this point that, so what is the way that we can help other people in order to get changed in a better way? And it was this beautiful verse of Holy Quran that Allah will not change the condition of a people as long as they do not change their state themselves. So here Allah informs us that positive change starts with individuals and community engaging. So here Allah informs us that positive change starts with individuals in a community engaging in a sincere effort to purify themselves. We all have a role to play in this, but motivating change in society is no simple matter. When I see people giving a da'wah or other motivational Islamic speeches, they are often filled with aggressive reminders of what is halal and what is haram. However, if we think back to the wise words that we talked in the last episode, this was never the way of Islam. Islam starts with the deep faith that you have to promote and develop in yourself. Then, after this phase of strengthening your faith towards the truth of Islam, the way is paved for you in order to get stronger, to fight against and struggle with your bad desires, and go for good deeds. And this is the first step for changing and for helping other people in order to go through the right path. So Islam started by teaching us to have iman and faith and taqwa or fear of Allah. Once we have these, obedience to His law should follow naturally. If we are seeking to improve the piety of our family or community, the best thing we can do is to encourage iman, not remind them of the rules. And this is the same thing that all of our infallibles, peace be upon them, and also all the leaders and ulama after them, put emphasis on to first start to change and revolution from your inner soul and inner personality, then go for change in other people. So, as we raise our own faith and iman, our good deeds flow more naturally from our hands. With Allah's permission, our good deeds will become solely for His sake. And it is these deeds which will bring us closer to Jannah. Allah recognizes that humans have a love for this world, but that the true believers are those who worldly temptation is overcome by fear of the day of judgment and resurrection. These believers focus their lives and deeds for pleasing Allah Almighty, rather than seeking to gain the respect of His creation. And this is the true inner revolution that everyone needs in order to take the first step of being a better human being. One of the most beautiful sentences I've read up to here from Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, which is, one of the blessings of this revolution has been the spiritual transformation observed in our society. So dear listeners, let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back in a heartbeat. Stay tuned. So, welcome back, dear listeners, to Arab English Radio. This is For a Better Life. And to give you a brief summary of what we talked up to now, it was all about the change that you have to start from yourself, then help other people in order to get developed and change their souls in order to have the best society. And we get to this point that it's not only about the inner revolution, sometimes it's about the external revolution that will change a whole society, and not only the society itself, but it has own consequences on all the nations around the world. So Islam bestows a duty upon all of us to change ourselves for the better. And we should remember Allah's Day of Judgment and the Resurrection Day often and perform good deeds only for the sake of Allah. For those of us that have wronged ourselves, we should remember that Allah forgives all sins if we genuinely repent to Him. And the point is, you have to remember the times and the triggers that will help you as reminders in order to keep yourself in the road, in the right path, and not get deviated. It's the time for all of us to think with ourselves and come back to Him and make our moments revolutionary in order to secure our place in hereafter and our resurrection day. After all, in Islam, it doesn't matter where you come from, it matters where you are going. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to me. It was all the time I had for today's episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.